This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome. Thank you for listening to our NBA season preview for the 2014 and 15 regular season. My name is Andrew Reich. I'm a regular hoops writer over there at placetobenation.com. You can read all my written previews as the season gets closer and closer. We're almost there. Not there yet, but just if you need a primer on all these divisions coming up, we're doing specific divisional breakdowns, and here with me to do another one, I got Adam Murray. How you doing, Adam?
Doing good yourself?
I'm good. Would you say this division's a bit of a loaded one, or do you think it's just much improved?
No, this is like the Spanish League of Soccer. You have two good teams, the rest are sort of mediocre. We all know Chicago and Cleveland will be 1-1A in this division, so it's just top heavy.
Yeah, I know nothing about soccer, so that went over my head, just like a soccer ball would. But but it's for the just as you could tell from what he was detailing, we're going to be talking about the Central Division. And the first team we're going to be talking about, and this is one of the signs of why we think this is going to be one of the divisions that a lot of people are going to be talking about, is because this is one of the teams that we think is going to be improved, and that's the Chicago Bulls. They the season they had last year, I think it had a lot more hype going into it than it wound up having at the end of the season. Would you say that?
Yeah, well, when you lose Derrick Rose for a second time, it sort of takes the wind out of your sails.
It did. They lost Derrick Rose, I believe, after 10 games. He tore his meniscus in the other knee in Portland, Oregon. He was out for the season. Joakim Noah was great, though, filling in as kind of like the point center, if there is such a thing. And they went 48-34. They had another top-ranked defense under Tom Thibodeau, but they just couldn't score enough points in the playoffs. The Washington Wizards, with their guard play and their solid starting five, they just overwhelmed them with their ability to score, and the Bulls couldn't match up to it. And they went out in five games in the first round. It kind of surprised people. I don't think it surprised me as much. Did it surprise you?
No, but your term, the term overwhelmed is a great, it's a great analogy or a great term that you did use, because Washington just came in, just mopped the floor with them with their size. And you could see they really addressed that this year, which we're going to get into.
Yes. So they did a little bit of shopping before they got, I guess you could call it window shopping. I don't know how close the deals really were. But they tried for the big pitch on Carmelo Anthony, you know, put his nice picture with a Bulls uniform on him outside of United Center, just try to coax him. Then not give him coke. I said coax. As in try to get him in there. But they also tried their hand at another one. Who was the other free agent that they tried to go after? There was one more, right?
I thought they just went in on it. Was either Gasol or Melo. There was no big. They were out of the Bosch sweepstakes.
Yeah, that was the other one I was thinking of, but I don't think that was realistic.
No, Bosch was just Houston or Miami.
Yeah. So Melo, once they got the feel of that Melo was not going to leave New York, then they turned and they got Pau Gasol on what looks like a decent deal. It's 3 years, just over $23 million, with a player option on the third year. Do you think that's a good deal for him?
I think it's a very good deal. Everyone's like, oh, he's over the hill, he's old, he's slowing down. People forget how really out of place he was in that D'Antoni system in L.A. He just was ostracized.
He was just miserable.
He was miserable. He looked miserable. All the big men looked miserable. Remember Chris Kaman was lying down on the bench for them? And so to say he's over the hill because he was in a system that didn't fit him is really sort of it's a little short-sighted to these people, I think.
So they did get Gasol. They didn't have to give him all the money in the world to get Gasol to go play there. But because of the fact of their cap space being a little bit tight because of the Derrick Rose contract that they still have and a couple of other players, Joakim Noah makes $12 million a year, they had to take out a couple of guys, and they put the amnesty, the last one I believe that's even possible, on Carlos Boozer. This was one that people were talking about probably when the amnesty clause opened. I was not shocked that they did it. I'm surprised that it took them this long to do it.
Well, what I don't get is Boozer wasn't that bad.
No, he never
missed a game. Everyone made it sound like he was just overpaid. We get it. That's what happens when you sign a 5-6 year deal. Towards the end, okay, you're getting kind of much, but he gave solid minutes. He had 13 points, 8 rebounds a game. They made it sound like he was just there and it was 4-on-5.
Yeah, he missed only 6 games. You know, he was a guy that is definitely past his best days, but he's a solid, formidable type of a power forward. And I don't know if they're going to miss him, like, terribly, but because of the fact that they have Gasol in his place. But he was kind of like a good hand to have, even though in the playoffs, he did have a history of not performing up to snuff.
Well, yeah, he underperformed, but that whole team pretty much underperformed in the playoffs.
Now, they did. They also had to let go a couple other smaller contracts. Lou Amundson, not going to be missed. Ronnie Brewer, not going to be missed. DJ Augustin, who basically played the role that Nate Robinson did the year before, and who had to step in at point guard when Rose went down. And he played admirably. He didn't play nearly as well as Nate Robb did on that
DJ Augustin?
DJ
Augustin. Are you serious? He resurrected his career in Chicago. Remember, he got run out of Charlotte. He was very mediocre in Toronto. All of a sudden, he comes here, and it was like out of nowhere, who is this kid who's decided to play?
Yeah. He definitely had a resurrection.
But I'm not saying, well, he would have been in China next year if you know, let's say he was Jimmer Fredette. He put out those numbers. He'd be in China right now.
No, he'd be in New Orleans wallowing with the rest of them.
but I'm trying to say is he went from a 10th man to like a 6th man. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by rejuvenating his career. Nobody's going to mistake him for an all-star, but he turned himself into a legit player, I think.
Yes, he did. He took advantage of that by taking a deal in Detroit that the Bulls knew they weren't going to be able to match because of the fact that they were tying up all their money with Gasol, Noah, and Rose. Not really a big three, kind of a really, really tall three, I guess. But yeah. they also got, in re-signing, they got Kirk Heinrich back. They got Nazir Muhammad back, actually, just recently. And then they got an international man in mystery. They got Nikola Mirotic. What country is he from?
Isn't he Macedonian?
Or Montenegro?
Montenegro, Macedonia, one of those Slavic nations.
Yeah, one of those countries that we didn't
know. But I don't know much about him, but he is the most hyped Euro player I think I've ever seen. That's been in Europe and stashed. He's the first one. Like, when is he coming over? When's he coming over?
Yeah, I could give you a couple others. I wouldn't say guys that were stashed, guys that came over immediately. One was Andrea Bargnani, just simply because he went number one.
He wasn't drafted and kept over there. Bargnani, Yao Ming, Gasols. Rubio. Yeah, he was hyped. Okay.
Luis Scola, but he was older when he came from Argentina. The reason why everyone knew Scola was because he had won a gold medal in the Olympics with Manu Ginobili, so he had a little bit of fanfare when he came over, but he was so old. Nikola Mirotic is a younger guy. I don't even know what his game is, to be honest with you. I hear he played at Real Madrid, which is like – that's kind of like – it's in that EuroLeague level that would be like well above college, American college, but still a step below the NBA. It'd be kind of like the minor leagues, like a good AAA minor league.
They are the official triple. They are just below the NBA.
So I don't know what we're going to see out of him, but I think the idea in mind, along with drafting Doug McDermott, my guy out of Creighton, Dougie McBuckets, is that they want to try to improve their three-point shooting, which last year was just absolutely abysmal. I'm trying to find the numbers. They were 26th in three-pointers made, 28th in attempts. So I have to think that was one of the aims for Thibodeau and the front office for the Bulls to improve their three-point shooting.
Yeah, but do you think McDermott could really provide anything else but threes? I just see him just as that slow. The sad thing is he's backing up Dunleavy. He's also the slow guy who shoots threes. So
he's Ryan Anderson.
Yeah, and is that what you really need?
For them, yes, because it's a good distraction. It's a good thing to kind of throw off on offense for teams that game plan against Chicago instead of just having to just put in this base game plan on defense of, okay, we know Chicago's not going to scare us unless Derrick Rose goes off, so we're just going to do our regular game plan and try to figure out Thibodeau's really, really complicated mix of man-to-man and zone defense. And now you got these players on the Chicago side on offense that can actually shoot, including Gasol. So I think it's going to mix and match a few things. But here's an interesting part. Just because you get good offensive players to play in a system doesn't mean that it's going to improve your team. Like the idea of, like, you remember when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers won the Super Bowl? And they had the defense, and the idea in mind was for John Gruden to just fix the offense, don't change a thing on defense. Well, that works in football, but in basketball, it doesn't work that way, because you got to play both ways.
You got the same guys, yeah.
Yeah, so do you think that's going to work for him?
I don't think it's going to work, because there's a lot of mixing and matching. Okay, you know, we realize they got Gasol, but Gasol can't play four on D anymore. He can't be stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to move. You're going to move Noah. They're going to have to switch roles on defense now.
I think that would be foolish. I would almost rather Gasol just kind of trade off playing time with Noah.
So you're just going to have Gasol be stretched out and they're just going to keep scoring over him because he doesn't have the lateral speed he had?
At the expense of Jimmy Butler, a very good defender in help defense, maybe so. But you're right, that is a risk on defense.
See, these are the questions that we have with this team going in. We know they bulked up, but will it pay off?
Okay, the player to watch, I think we're both in agreement here, and it's a guy who put in tons of minutes. He was like the Iron Man of the NBA, and that was Jimmy Butler. He didn't come in with any hype at all out of Marquette, but he really played his way into a cush role as like the premier defender, like the one-on-one guy. I've always noticed that when LeBron plays the Bulls, Jimmy Butler gives him tons of problems, and The one deal though with Butler is that his offense has not really come along yet, and it's we're out of year three now. He will be a restricted free agent next year. He will make well over the $3 million qualifying offer. So, do you think it would be worth it to keep him since they already had to scratch up pennies just to get what they have now?
Well, it depends which Jimmy Butler shows up. You know, right now he is a kid who's ready to break out, but he played a ton of minutes, only shot 28% from three, not going to cut it.
Mm-hmm.
So he is really the X factor. If he explodes, like I think a lot of people are expecting him to, the team will go far. If he withers, both wings are now suspect, and you just have Derrick Rose on no knees and a bunch of big guys behind him.
So I would assume that your player to watch in terms of where the team goes, he goes, is Derrick Rose.
I got Jimmy Butler.
Really? You think Butler's more important?
He's more important because Derrick Rose, they played without him for two of the past 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to, that's why they got Heinrich back as a sort of an insurance. Jimmy Butler has no backup. Who's his backup? Heinrich as well.
It would probably be McDermott.
Well then, okay, fine. Who's backing up Dunleavy? Taj Gibson? What, are you going to put on four power forwards out right now?
Well, you mentioned to me in a previous conversation that Gibson got screwed by the transactions. Can you explain that?
Well, Taj Gibson was in line to start. All of a sudden, you get Mitrotic and Gasol in. His minutes have now shrunk up.
That's a good idea.
Was ready to take on a bigger role, and now he's now the 10-minute bench guy.
All right, so this team's going to definitely be a challenger for the divisional title, at least. But how many wins do you think they can max out at?
Oh, I think they could hit 60 easily.
Just like they did in 2011 and 2012?
Just like they did. I think even if you have Derrick Rose back at 70% all year, that is enough for 60 wins, especially in the East.
Yeah, I have to correct myself because in 2012 it was impossible to win 60 wins because they only had 66 games, but they had the best record in the NBA that year. But DeRose, he looked good in FIBA World Cup in terms of quickness. I thought he looked a little faster, a little bit more nimble. but his shot was so rusty. I don't know. I really hope his shot's not broken. I can't say that about a superstar NBA player who won MVP. I mean, he's gonna find his way back to shooting the ball well again, I have to assume. So if Rose comes back even like at 80%, I think this is a team that can win about 57 games. I don't want to say 60 yet because I think they're going to have issues with adjusting to the new offensively minded players like Gasol, like McDermott, like Aaron Brooks, and
well,
see how
think,
they work.
If you think McDermott is going to be hitting threes all day, all Derrick Rose has to do is just run down and kick it out to him. Gasol's sitting there at 20 feet. Butler's out there. So Rose doesn't have to take over the game immediately.
Yeah. So we're going to leave there for Chicago, get out of the Windy City. We're going to go to the team that had been the dominant force in the Central Division before Chicago did, and that was the Cleveland Cavaliers. Now, I think we have an idea that – I think something happened in Cleveland, right?
Johnny Manziel?
Oh, yeah, that happened. Brandon Wheaton got cut.
New Hall of Fame class for rock and roll. Probably. Drew Carey's still repping it big. I am over the Cleveland hype right now when you have, you know, the stories of lines around the door for a scrimmage. It's like
that's a little much, but let's be honest, we were already prepared for that with Miami. So seeing it like the encore version of it in Cleveland we haven't said the name, LeBron James is back in Cleveland. And so we're prepared for it, but so it makes it a little less unbearable. In Miami, it was fucking unbearable. I couldn't. It just got to a point where they were like showing practices on NBA TV, and I just couldn't stand it. But let's say that we'll get out of that now because we talked about a lot of that with the Miami preview, and we're just going to go forward now with Cleveland. Obviously, they had a bad team last year. Mike Brown was the head coach. He's already gone. The GM who was the guy there, he's gone. But let's throw every team stat that you had for Cleveland out of the window because they don't mean a damn thing anymore. Because with LeBron there, with a new head coach and David Blatt, with Kevin Love that they acquired in the trade after he had piqued his interest to go to Cleveland after LeBron signed, you got this new big three. It's LeBron James at small forward, Kevin Love in the paint or on the outside where he shoots well, and you got Kyrie Irving at the point. How do you like that mix for a big three?
I had mentioned this in previous conversations. It's just the same as Miami. It's just cold Miami now. You bring over, you have a couple all-stars who play with you. You bring bench players who you've played with. This team is no different than Miami.
Yeah, they
just the names on the jerseys are different.
What Adam's alluding to is that we already talked about LeBron and Kevin Love going over there. Mike Miller is going went with LeBron. He left Memphis. He was actually going to sign a deal with Denver, and then he changed his mind when LeBron convinced him to go to Cleveland. James Jones, who was a shooter out with the Heat, he's there.
Yeah, they picked Sean up Sean Marion.
Yeah, Sean Marion, who was kind of his foil in the 2011 NBA Finals at small forward. He was giving them a lot of problems. Now, that was 3 years ago, so I don't know what Marion's got left, but he's there. Joe Harris, a guy they drafted. Alex Kirk is an undrafted free agent.
Point is, you're just getting these veterans, like, same thing with Miami did. You had Battier, you had a couple other guys just come in. Oh, we're veterans. We know we're not superstars. Let's try to get a ring. These are just all hired guns again.
But I'll say this. Miami, it took a year because they had that traditional offense that they were trying to run at first, and it just really wasn't working. It didn't really click for them until they played the finals against the Thunder and realized that, you know, they could run this small ball. Do you think that they're going to be able to figure something out pretty quickly between the new big three there and David Blatt? Or do you think it's going to take a year of kind of rotating the role players and finding the right guys to win a championship?
Well, yes, you hit the nail on the head. In Miami, they had the coach who tried to install his system. Here, the coach doesn't know anything, doesn't know any player from anybody. They have no camaraderie. They have no team unity yet. So you really are working with a blank slate.
Now, LeBron has never played. Mo Williams made the All-Star team, but that's kind of like a trivia question. Kyrie Irving is the best point guard he's ever played with. I would be safe to say that Dwayne Wade was more of a two-guard. So to have a traditional point guard there, David Blatt came from Maccabi Tel Aviv, but he is an American citizen. He came from Princeton under Pete Carril, so he runs sort of a supercharged version of the Princeton offense. So we're not going to get into the complication of Princeton's offense because we could talk about that forever. But basically, it's a motion offense in which one action is dictated by what the defense does. It's more of a read and react type of offense. Do you see that working with an elite point guard handling the ball most of the time, or should they just still keep the ball in LeBron's hands, either in the post or handling off of a screen at the top of the key?
Well, the one thing with the Princeton offense is you're just going to be bored to death waiting for the shot clock to run down. So it
burn offense, as they call it.
Yeah. It's good to have a quality point guard running that offense, but you don't need LeBron to have the ball the entire time. Once it comes to fourth quarter, you know that's going to happen anyways, but the rest of the game.
But Miami put themselves in a situation with age and such that they had to put the ball in LeBron's hands all the time.
Well, they just relied on him too much.
They did.
It was just, you're a superhero, do whatever you, it's your team. Like, no, you can't. That's where ultimately they fail. You still have to go back to some sort of team concept.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the fourth and fifth guy there is going to help you win. You're not going to win just by yourself, and you need a quality point guard to run that offense and maintain the discipline of the Princeton offense.
Now, this is going to be a different team for LeBron in a lot of ways, even though he's going back to old stomping grounds, because the team that he had we're going to get this out right now, is that this team that he's going into with Cleveland is a lot better than the team he had left when he left Cleveland in 2010. This team is much, much, much better. In fact, I would say that this team is actually better before they got Kevin Love. With Kevin Love now, it's interesting because you have better shooting. You have an offensively-minded coach instead of a defensively-minded one like they had with Spoelstra and Mike Brown in his previous stops. But, and you mentioned this, and I agree with you, the one-on-one defense for Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving is substandard. And it's going to be interesting to see how much work LeBron has to put in order to raise up the defensive level in Cleveland, because it's not built in.
Correct.
So what do you see there with the defense? Do you think it's going to be a mediocre defense because LeBron's going to make him from bad to okay? Or do you think he alone can carry the defense to being good?
They really just need to install a team defense and just sort of cover for one another, because there's just a lot of bad pieces. Like, Varejao is injured. I was reading an interview today that said they're thinking of putting Thompson at the starting center and having Varejao save himself up and just come off the bench.
So I don't like that idea.
Well, would you rather have him get injured in 30 games?
Well, if it means that Thompson has to step up and play more, then maybe it might be a good thing, because Thompson almost averaged double-double.
Thompson will give you solid defense. He could cover for both Varejao and Tristan Thompson can cover for Love.
But it is a buddy system at the end of the day, and LeBron is friends with Varejao. So, yeah,
yeah,
you're probably right.
Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving are not stopping anybody.
No, it's sort of an Ole defense almost. Now, what Glenn Taylor, the owner of the Timberwolves, said about Kevin Love, that was pretty fucking low. But, well, I mean, like, the owner of the Timberwolves can't play. Why don't you get your ass out there and play defense is what I say. But he was half right. Kevin Love isn't a great defender. He's a good rebounder, but, I mean, it's kind of an argument of chicken or the egg. How much is rebounding part of defense, you know?
Exactly.
So it's going to be interesting. I think they're going to run an up-tempo system where they're going to just try to outscore people at first to see how it goes, because I think the offense is going to chug along fine. It was a bit of a struggle for the first 3 months or 4 months with Wade Bosch and James, because they almost kind of like ran into each other when they were trying to do runouts. With this team, they know their spots on the court, and they can transcend it where they don't get in each other's way to get buckets. So this is a team I think is going to score a lot of points.
By default, you have two of the top scorers in the league, even Kyrie. Kyrie put in 20 a game, so there's no reason they can't just score by default.
So they got a lot of other role players, like we already mentioned, some of them. Some of them you might not know, some of them you're definitely going to find out. Is there one that you think we should look out for?
I believe the X factor for this team is Deion Waiters and what is in his head. Because he's spouting off his mouth already, saying how they're the best backcourt. He's a starter, and
Vince Young thinks Vince Young thinks you should be quiet now.
He has proven nothing to this point, and to say you have the best starting backcourt, and I don't know. He's a player who wants the ball. He is not going to see the ball ever on that court.
Waiters is a good one-on-one guy, so and he also can shoot at the top of the key. Thompson's going to be a restricted free agent next year, so it'll be interesting to see if they try to keep him. Likely not. Now we're going to just go ahead and get through Cleveland here. Do you see them winning this division over Chicago? Because I really think this is the top. These are the big mamma jammas here.
It'll be, you know, one team will have 61 wins, the other will have 60. It's really 1 and 1A.
What would you rather have, Cleveland's offense or Chicago's defense?
Defense.
Because it's proven?
Exactly. Defense, you can, as long as you can defend, you could keep the game close. If you're just letting them go through like the D'Antoni system and just hope you win 140 to 139, you're kind of in trouble.
Yeah, you say Vegas has them at 58 right now. I just don't. That's a good line, but the reason why I'm always skittish to do 60 wins on a team that just kind of gets thrown together like a mad scientist experiment like that is that there's just always a hiccup in either in the middle of the year or kind of down the stretch where you drop a few games and you have chemistry issues and you have to diddle with your lineup a little bit. And I just don't think they're going to be this kind of team where – because if you get 60 wins, that means you went through a stretch where you really only had one bad like outing in terms of games for maybe like a couple of weeks or maybe a week and a half. And I just think that Cleveland's going to have a few more problems like that. I don't think it's going to be like trouble in paradise. I don't think they're going to be like – 40-win team or 50-win team. I think they're going to be well above 50, but I just don't see 60.
Okay.
You see 60 or more?
I have 60. You have under 58, so.
Mm-hmm. I'll say 57, 56. I still think that'll be better than Chicago's, though, because Chicago, like we already talked about, has a few warts that they have to pop, too. We're going to get out of Cleveland now. We're going to leave the two front runners, as a lot of people feel. And we're going to even go farther back to the future because we talked about Chicago, who was winning the divisions in 2011 and 2012. Then we talked about Cleveland that won the division title in 2009 and 2010. And now we're going – it feels like ancient years, but it's really not. And we're going to go to the Detroit Pistons, who had some pretty happy days where they were winning one Central Division championship after the next from like 2005 until 2008. And they haven't seen so many happy times, though, huh?
No, they've made very bad signing after bad signing. And
oh, Charlie Villanueva and Ben Gordon.
Then they just went downhill. It's a shame, but it is Detroit, so I have no love lost for them.
Yeah, that's my feeling, too. Silence. we talked about bad signings, and then Joe Dumars had his grand finale when he signed Josh Smith. He signed him to – let me see if I even have the numbers in front of me. Yes, I do. It is – he's got 3 years left, $14 million each year, guaranteed, no option out. So you're stuck with Josh Smith unless you can convince somebody to take his really crappy contract for a guy who's really good and never gets injured but chucks up way too many threes and is a total malcontent who gets his coaches fired. So, yeah, congratulations. You just got a real winner there.
Yeah, but he's playing out of position in Detroit.
He's been playing out of position his whole career.
Yeah, but he made it work in Atlanta. And his defense is still very good if you watch him play.
Mm-hmm. Good
job. He just makes stupid shit. If you have a coach saying, don't shoot the ball, his defense is worth that contract. His offense and his head, not so much.
No, I'm trying to look here. I think he had his career high that last year in 3-point field goal attempts. I think, yeah, 3.43, 26%. Which is kind of like a broke gambler who keeps betting thousands of dollars every night at Vegas. Like, dude, you're not winning anytime soon. But he's always been a 3-point shooter, and now he's just living up to his reputation, it seems.
At what point is that the coach just saying, I don't care?
Well, they had no coach at the end because they fired Maurice Cheek.
Yeah.
Good transition there. And so Joe Dumars was out, and the new owner of the Detroit Pistons after Bill Davidson passed away, he handed the team off to a familiar face who had had success with the Orlando Magic and the Miami Heat, and that's Stan the Man, Stan Van Gundy. Did you like this hire?
That's a very good hire. In Orlando, his players really overachieved.
Oh, yeah.
So there's no reason he can't have this happen all over again.
The problem for me with Stan is that, and you're right, I think you're half right. I think that a lot of the role players and smaller guys overachieved and wanted to play hard for Stan, but he always had contentious and venomous relationships with the superstars. And usually it was big guys, probably because of the fact that, and now we're going to go into some stats, is that Van Gundy's teams became much more heavily dependent on three-point shooting as the years go by. If you look at trends, because the fact that Stan is controlling the entire look of this team, that's really all you can go by with Detroit, because he's going to fashion the team in the same way. And the three things I noticed about the teams he had in Miami and Orlando, they were always top 10 in defense, scoring defense, and they were always in the top 10 or in the top 5 in three-point field goal attempts and made. In his last 3 years in Orlando, they were first in threes made and three attempts. And their two-point percentage is also high, because you spread out those defenses with three-point shooters and you can dump it off to the big man inside for dunks. And they also have a big man this time for Stan Van Gundy's next trip, right?
For now, they do.
Oh, you think he'll be gone sometime soon?
If you sign a one-year deal, there's no reason they can't ship him out if they don't think he's going to sign long-term.
Well, they got Monroe. I was kind of guessing the other way, because you're talking about Greg Monroe.
Oh, you're going with Drummond?
I talk about the drum man, Andre Drummond, who was the leader in the league in offensive rebounds. I think he had 5 a game by himself. Very, very young. He's raw, but he's definitely coming along.
He is developing at a pace that is really exceeding what everyone has expected.
But you were talking about Monroe, though.
I was talking about Monroe. That's where I thought you were going. I had a 50-50 shot, because Monroe is a center, I think, but he got bumped out because Drummond came in and sort of marked his claim.
But do you think he fits that system if Stan does the same thing?
No, he doesn't fit the system. And with the signings, they signed I'm not going to mention the contract numbers on Jody Meeks, because they're just sort of laughable.
He made about $19 million over 3 years.
Yeah, DJ Augustine, Caron Butler. These are all three-point shooters.
Hey, you love DJ Augustine, you said.
He resurrected his career in Chicago, I believe.
Mm-hmm. We got to go all the way back. But Augustine, you know, that's not terrible for him. Jody Meeks, I'm with you there. That's a reach. He did that just because he needed a dead-on three-point shooter, and he got one.
Is it a reach? But bad teams need to overpay. Mm-hmm. That's just a fact. If you want players, if you have Gasol taking a discount to go to a winner, you have all these players, you know, stacking up on super teams, you need to get somebody, okay, we'll pay you $2 million more. We'll give you that extra money just so we could get you.
Yeah.
Are they bad signings? No, but they're overpaid, but you have to do that.
Well, it was the same thing that we talked about with in an earlier preview. We talked about Al Jefferson with Charlotte. At the time, people thought it was a bad deal because he was just taking the money. Another one that we know is a bad deal, and we're going to get to them later, is O.J. Mayo with the Milwaukee Bucks. But yeah. So some of them work out because they actually play hard once they get their money, and some of them just, you know, kick it back like Chris Kaman does on the bench, and they just don't care. But Stan is a guy, like you already mentioned, he can motivate the right guys in order to find success. He needs to wiggle some good talent out of guys that you don't really expect out of him. Do you see anybody like that, though, on this roster outside of Drummond? That's where it kind of gets sketchy, because you got Kyle Singler. He's okay. Caron Butler is down at the end of his career. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is very raw. We don't really know what he's made of yet.
He's talented, but his growth is going to be kind of stunted by Jody Meeks.
That's true, because they want him to shoot instead of Pope.
Yep. Jonas Yerikbo. He's
done.
He was a nice hustle guy until Dumars decided to give him $20 million over 5 years.
I think they're going to play Singler a lot like Turkoglu, where he's just going to be a spot shooter who plays at the four even though he's a three.
Yeah, just play small ball and just have Drummond be the anchor.
Well, we say small ball because the usual guy who would play at the four in most cases is either Monroe or, if they wanted to switch up, Josh Smith. Do you see Josh Smith on this team by the end of the season?
Yes.
Because nobody wants him.
The only one who really wants him is Sacramento.
That's true. And
if they okay, I'll put it this way. Let's say they move Monroe, they trade Monroe for a decent small forward, and they move Josh Smith to the four.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would improve the team? Do you think he'd be better?
Their shot blocking inside would be very, very good.
See, so I think you just sort of – he's sort of playing out of position at the three. If you're standing by the three-point line, he's like, I'm just going to shoot threes.
Who would you – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Who would you rather have, Andre Drummond right now or Dwight Howard when Stan got there in 2007?
Andre Drummond is more coachable.
Did you just say Dwight Howard's not coachable?
He even had the prima donna stuff back in our, you know, it was the I'm the good Christian boy, and that just sort of disappeared real fast.
Yeah, I love how he always said he never curses yet. He led the league in technical fouls, which you could only get in the NBA by cursing out the referee. They don't give you a technical foul for saying, oh, come on, ref. You know,
the only one of the few things that sort of vindicates Van Gundy is how you mentioned Howard has pretty much run out every coach to date, mm-hmm. and it's going to continue probably with McHale. But that's for the that has been mentioned in the Southwestern preview. So check on that episode.
So yeah, good plug. Stan has got control of this team. It's not the team he wants right now. I think everybody knows that. But you know, you deal the hand you're dealt. So this year, we're actually going to broaden this one out a little bit in terms of over and under, because I think this one's a little bit harder to predict than others. I'm not even going to talk about win number. Is this going to be a 500 ball club?
That is the over and under. I believe that's the benchmark they want to hit.
Oh, we know the bookies then.
I don't know what Vegas has, but 500 just seems like they're not terrible. We know they're not upper echelon, but I think they could be perfectly mediocre.
You know who the tipping point is, right? It's Brandon Jennings.
What happened to him?
Well, he had a career high in assists, but his points were down, and his field goal percentage is still bad. I don't know. He went out in the open market after Milwaukee, his deal with Milwaukee ended, and nobody wanted him because I think all the analytic people that looked at his numbers said, this guy is just not worth a shit.
Well, there was that weird thing with Atlanta who was just playing with Teague, and that was just a weird thing. His numbers aren't bad. He's just – I don't know what his problem is. Maybe he's just one of those people that this is his ceiling, and we just don't know it yet.
I think he's past his ceiling. I think he is what he is now. I think he's got to do something like Monte Ellis did, his former backcourt mate in Dallas. It needs to be we'll talk about it on a later episode, but you need to be on your best basketball behavior is what I call it. You know, you got to basically audition. You have to say, look, I can be a good player. I can do better, even if you don't really mean it. You know, even if that's not who you are, Brandon Jennings is not an assist guy, but he should at least try, you know, just to try to show people he can do more than what people thought he could do.
I don't know, because is Van Gundy, that's not really a strong point of assists. He's just, again, shoot threes, so.
Stan Van Gundy's strong point, though, is that he always wins games. He gets 50 wins almost every team he's coached, but can he get to 50 wins with this team?
In a couple years, I think so.
But not this year. The streak ends?
If they won 50, I would be shocked.
Me too. That would be a little bit much.
I think us talking about 500, everyone's like, whoa, that's way too high. This team really is terrible.
So. They're not terrible. They're just, it's kind of like Detroit in general. They're just blah, you know, and it's not the worst thing to be blah. You know, the Memphis Grizzlies are blah and they go to the playoffs every year. This one just hasn't because of bad decision making in the front office that they have since cured. But it takes a while to get all the other problems in your system.
Charlie Villanueva.
Oh my God. Charlie's still around though. I'm also remembering a couple of other deals that they signed. Will Bynum, he's still there, actually. His actually, you know what? I'm wrong. His deal wasn't bad. The Stuckey deal was the one that was bad.
Yeah.
And good transition there, because we're going to go to the team that Rodney Stuckey is now playing for. So we're going to get out of the rut here in Detroit, but now we're going to just be jumping back into another one. And and that's the Indiana Pacers. Now, when we say rut and Pacers, people are like, huh? What are you talking about? They went to the Eastern Conference Finals. They were like the last undefeated team remaining. Well, you didn't tune in after March, because what happened is everything went to shit. They had a 10-13 regular season finish. They still were first in the conference, because I think the Miami Heat just had a case of the lazies. And they barely beat the Hawks in the first round. They struggled against the Washington Wizards in the second round. And then they got dropped by the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. So you're thinking to yourself, okay, but why are you still saying they're in the rut? Well, this is why. Because Lance Stephenson, who was their second best guard, maybe their best guard in some people's opinions, depending on what you think Paul George is, he signed with the Charlotte Hornets, so he's gone. And then in a scrimmage for Team USA in Las Vegas, unfortunately, Paul George was trying to guard James Harden, and he planted his leg on what do they call that thing?
I have no clue.
The basket barrier, whatever, the base, and he broke his leg pretty much in half. Really, really terrible, and he's likely to be out for the year, even though we've heard reports that he's already putting weight back on his leg, but I don't expect him back. Do you?
No, there's no point for him to come back. If they're going to, what, battle for like an 8 seed at best? I think so. What can he possibly provide? And this Charlotte is another team of just pure what-ifs. Mm-hmm. What if Paul George went down before they got rid of Lance?
They would have tried harder to keep Lance.
They would have kept him. His deal would have been worse, because the addition, who did they pick up? They, besides Stuckey.
Well, the thing that made it even more unfortunate with George is that the injury happened at the beginning of August, when a lot of people had already cleaned up on their stockpiling. So what they did is that they had signed C.J. Miles from the Cleveland Cavaliers. They signed Stuckey, like we mentioned, okay, two guard. They got a Croatian named Damjan Rudisch. Have you seen him at all?
I know nothing about him other than he's 28 years old and just keeps shooting.
They re-signed Lavoy Allen. They signed over Chris Singleton, who had played for the Wizards for a cup of coffee. Adonis Thomas, a young guy who played in Philadelphia. Orenze Onuwaku, who played for New Orleans. A couple of guys, they added some size. They added a little bit of shooting with Rudej and CJ Miles. But, yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag there, I would say, to say the least. It's not one of those transaction off seasons where it's just blowing you away, you know. And losing Paul George, I mean, it's not like you lost, like, a guy who's, like, going downward. Paul George is one of the best ascendant superstars in the league. He was pretty much toe-to-toe with LeBron James on some nights when they played in the finals. So it's tough.
CJ Miles is actually going to be a quality signing, I think. Mm-hmm. They got him for a near minimum deal. He put up almost 10 points a game in like 20 minutes in Cleveland. So it's not like he's the guy who could step up and take over.
You know, I think he's a mirror image of? He played with him in Utah for a year. He reminds me of Wesley Matthews.
That's a good comparison.
Just a guy who works hard, never stops, and even if he's playing over his head, he doesn't mind trying to make as many plays as he can.
So that would have been an improvement over Lance, I think, with him and Stuckey, two people sort of replacing one. But I think George Hill, he's going to be as good as we think he is. All the small forwards are just, they got nobody now. Nothing. Scola, we don't even know if they're going to get rid of Scola.
Yeah, he's been amnestied once.
They're like, oh, they're going to cut him. They're not going to cut him. They're going to cut him. They're not going to cut him. And really, the only question with this team, because they really don't have much, is what is Roy Hibbert going to do now?
That's the big what if. That's my player to watch there, because he's got an opt out after this year, but it's 15 mil, so Lord knows if he can even get that on the open market. But he's got to step up. He can't do his case of the mopeys where he's mad because somebody slept with his stripper girlfriend or whatever stupid story got out there about why he was angry at everybody all the time. You know, he's just an introverted guy. So is another guy that you know as a Boston Celtics fan, Rajon Rondo. But Rondo brings his hard hat, you know. Roy Hibbert doesn't. Roy Hibbert sometimes just doesn't even fucking show up. And he was an all-star starter, right? He started the all-star game.
Yeah, but that whole team, The problem with the Pacers last year was they just got mentally fatigued. They didn't know what to do when the season got on. They just withered from the inside.
Yeah, and we already talked about Tom Thibodeau, whose main criticism, despite his great defense that he installs, is that he's a bit of a grinder. I think Stan Van Gundy is a bit of a grinder, too. Frank Vogel was trying to do the same thing to try to convince his team that they could take down Miami, and they failed miserably. Now he's going to probably have to grind on them even more in order to compensate for the loss of George and Stevenson. Do you think it's going to work?
No, I think they're at this impasse. You would just tank the year, get a high pick, and then essentially challenge for next year's championship or try to grind out for an 8 seed, which is no guarantee.
They were second in defense, which is great. No doubt there.
But you lose two of your top defenders.
Yeah, and you lost your leading rebounder and your leading rebounders and assist guys, because unbelievably, Lance and Paul George both had more rebounds per game than Roy Hibbert did, which is just insane. And they also were the 24th best scoring team at 96.7, and you got some numbers on that, right?
No.
They got let me see how much of their offense they lost. Oh my god.
Oh, they lost a third.
36%.
Okay, 36%. Oh, that's
36% of a bad offense.
Your best player is David West now.
You would usually say in that case you would usually say addition by subtraction, but you subtracted your two best players.
You subtracted your best players. Another funny what if you let Evan Turner go. I don't think it was his fault. I think the team was already in a lost cause before he showed up.
Well, you need scoring now, and he just walked out the door.
You just let him go, and he could have been your go-to guy, because he put up numbers in Philly with no expectations. Okay. Before they let him go, he was the leading scorer, I believe.
They have three players named CJ?
Yes.
CJ Fair! Oh my god, they got him as an undrafted free agent out of Syracuse. CJ Fair, CJ Copeland, and we need to find
Miles.
We need to look it up and see if Chris Copeland has a J in his and could just call him
I think Chris Singleton's Chris Singleton Jr. So
they might have five CJs, including a British CJ.
So
but I like Chris Copeland.
If that's the best stat I can dig up is you have three guys with the same name, your team is just – there's really not much to talk about them, unfortunately.
My player – before we get to the wins and losses, my player to watch is David West, because I just don't know what he's got left. I know he's played so well and he's been so consistent. Even after he tore his knee and kind of had that okay – like semi-decent year after the lockout. I thought he's been playing well. He reminds me of Antonio McDice. He's just old, reliable. But now he's 34, and you're turning into that age at 35 and 36 like Kobe and Garnett are now, where it's – even if you're an all-star, even at your best, you're starting to show your age. I just don't know if he's going to be able to show anything like he did for the last few years.
That's why. Do they really need to? Do you think the Indiana fan base would be angry if they tanked this year? It's understandable.
I think they have a good excuse. I don't think they're going to tank it on purpose.
As long as you have Philly in the league where, you know, they're trying to change rules because of them, you're just allowed to put a team out for this year because of the injuries.
So what do you
say? They might pull a Chicago and get strong at the end and somehow find their magic, but I just don't see it with this team.
You just hit the nail on the head there, and that's where I was going, is that in 2012-13, the Bulls were in the exact same position without Rose, and they did themselves well, overachieved, and got to the second round. What do you see for this team?
Lottery.
But how deep? How far down? How far down does Rabbit Hole go?
35, 36 wins.
I'm kind of in agreement with you there. I'm pretty close there. I think they might just tickle the last playoff spot, though.
Yeah, I think that'll go to Detroit.
But you think Detroit will be better than Indiana?
Yeah.
Okay.
They just don't have – this seems like a deflated team now if you lose – if you lose your top guys and don't replace them with anybody.
Okay, so we're going to leave this team, and it kind of sounds really terrible and depressing, but don't worry, kids. We have an even more terrible and depressing team that we're going to go to, because we're safe.
But they're not depressing. They have excitement now.
Last year they were.
Last year they were terrible.
We're saving the worst for last, and that was the Milwaukee Bucks or the Milwaukee Yucks or the Milwaukee Sucks or whatever random internet meme you'd like to give them to say that they were terrible. They were even worse than the Philadelphia 76ers, who were obviously trying to tank, so they were 15-67. I even said this in my written preview, is that they're the worst kind of bad. They're the kind of bad that you don't remember.
Yeah, it takes a lot of talent to just be really bad. And don't forget, they wanted to win. They kept stocking up and, like, we can make the 8th seed and the 6th seed every year. We'll give OJ Mayo money. We'll trade for JJ Redick. They kept trying to patch up the holes and just...
Well, I felt like last summer was the give up when they let Monte Ellis go. They let Brandon Jennings go. They did sign OJ Mayo, but it wasn't like, let's try to make the playoffs, guys. It was kind of like, let's just kind of start over here. And the bottom fell out on them pretty quickly. They had losing streaks separately of 10 games, 9 games, 8 games, 6 games, 2 5 game winning losing streaks. And then a 4-game losing streak. So they were losing, and they were losing often. And that cost, basically, Larry Drew's job. But it was kind of interesting the way that Larry Drew got replaced, right?
That was just weird and shady, and Milwaukee really had nothing to lose, but the guy was still under contract. And then you hire Jason Kidd, and then don't tell him he's fired till like a week later. It was just, you know,
that's
new
what happens,
ownership.
That's what happens when you give a team to two hedge funds guys and you try to trust them. So
yeah.
We're talking about Wes Edens and Mark Lazary. They bought the team for $550 million. That was a record at the time for a sale. And then Ballmer like turned that into the fucking change in the bottom of his car. And so, yeah, they basically did a clandestine mission there where they found out that Jason Kidd wanted out of Brooklyn. And they gave him a deal with control. I don't know what kind of control, because they didn't officially give him a managerial role. But it's clear that Jason Kidd went to Milwaukee because he had the promise that he didn't have to listen to the GM all the time. He could make some of the decisions on his own. Did you think, though, that that was an improvement from head coach from Larry Drew to Jason Kidd?
It's interesting. I don't know if it's better or it's worse. It's just noteworthy.
We usually go to this point where we talk about the parts that were good and the parts that were bad, but let's be honest, the Bucks were all bad. The only thing that was good was offensive rebounding.
The good part was the Greek Freak.
Oh, I love Giannis Antetokounmpo.
So how can you say there was nothing good there? This kid came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he's the darling of the NBA now.
6.8 points, 4.4 rebounds, 1.9 assists. So you listen to that and say, what is that? Yeah, but he did that in 24 minutes average.
He did that running circles.
Yeah.
Not knowing what to do.
He's the Greek Freak. He's not even, I don't even know if he's 19 or 20 years old yet. And so he's very, very, very raw. He reminds me a little bit of a guy that we just talked about in passing, and that's Lance Stephenson. I think he's a little bit like him, but he wants to play point guard. I don't know if that works, though.
That's why I'm with Jason. Like, okay, he knows point guards, but it's just very suspect. Why would you want him being a point? I don't even know what position he is anymore, because the kid's like 6'10 now.
He's like a
point center.
I think he's a shooting guard that can't score, kind of like Thabo Sefolosha.
Like, you want him playing point. They picked up Jared Bayless and Kendall Marshall from...
Now, Kendall Marshall is a great assist man, but that's all he does well. Nothing else.
But he's a point guard. Bayless, as I saw in his time in Boston, point guard. Nate Walter is point guard. Brandon Knight, point guard.
Brandon Knight is the worst starting point guard in the NBA.
No.
Who you got?
The worst starting point guard in the NBA now is Phil Presley, because Rondo's going to be gone for...
Or it's going to be Marcus Smart. But we're diverting. But Brandon Jennings, he's going to be – Brandon Jennings, we're talking about another Buck. Let's go to the other one, Brandon Knight. He's going to be a restricted free agent next year. I don't even see him trying to keep him.
Why?
He's not good, madam.
In what?
anything. He's not good at passing. He's not good at shooting the ball. He's one of the worst shooters in the whole league. I just don't see the upside with Knight, especially when Kidd, unless Kidd gets his hands on him and really does a resurrection.
That is, I believe, it was another case like Detroit. This team was terrible. Brandon Knight, I want to go run around and shoot. All right, have fun. What do I care? We're not winning anyways. Yeah. He did put up 18 points a game, and yeah, 5 assists isn't that special, but...
But it's a shame that everybody knows him for getting dunked on by Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
I mean, not Andre Drummond, DeAndre Jordan, the other,
DeAndre Jordan,
the other man-child.
So at what point is it just a player on a bad team saying, I'm just going to let you shoot, as opposed to him being really bad?
Well,
this team needs hope. All my review on them is just pure positivity, because you can't get any worse than what they did.
Well, you said hope, and they found it, because they got the number 2 overall pick, and they picked Jabari Parker out of Duke. A lot of people that think is the most ready player coming out of the draft. Andrew Wiggins went number 1, but he's still got a little ways to go as an offensive player. Jabari doesn't. He's a guy. We talked about a little bit about Aaron Aflalo and the fact that he's not a guy he's a good player, but he's not a player that you want to put his face on a poster board or on a banner outside the arena. Jabari Parker is. He's a guy that could carry your team. He could be marketable. He could bring excitement to the team, but it's going to take a couple of years before he really figures it out.
Well, you hope so. And people like Chris Middleton, John Henson, they're serviceable.
I like
John
Henson.
They're not terrible. Mm-hmm. They're not sexy players, but they'll put in solid minutes for you.
Don't tell their wives that.
Johnny O'Brien, as you know from LSU.
I'll say Johnny O'Brien is not sexy.
But is he any worse than like Brandon Bass or Big Baby?
I watched him. He's a traditional back to the basket center. So he's a throwback. I like the fact that they drafted him because he was one of the only true centers in that draft that could actually provide you rebounding and junk points. So he's a little bit like Big Baby Davis, only taller and more polished, to be honest with you.
But still undersized.
He is a little undersized, but he's not a midget out there. I think he can handle himself. He but does have a lot of other fellow big men out there with Ersan Ilyasova, Larry Sanders, who had a really good year, got a big contract, and then had like the worst year ever on the court and off the court. And I think the other one you already mentioned, John Henson, and then Zsa Pachulia,
Zsa and Ilyasova, they both disappeared last year.
Ilyasova's the shooter, and his shooting went way down the poo-poo chute. And then you had Zsa. I don't know what happened to Pachulia.
So, and then, really, the only person we haven't mentioned is the one I have as the X Factor, headcase Larry Sanders.
I can't even go into detail what Larry Sanders did last year. I think he got in a nightclub incident.
He got to a nightclub. He broke the orbital bone in his eye.
He yelled at a fan. And
that's just lack of discipline. Mm-hmm. And I would like to say Jason Kidd would bring discipline, but I remember his he's had some legal issues in his career. Oh, I will
Jason Kidd?
Let's just leave it at that. So if he comes back and he comes back healthy, he's a double-double machine.
Now, you put on here, because we're getting to the end here, this team can run, to which I put 3 giant question marks.
Giannis Antetokounmpo can run around anybody, and that's all he does. Jabari Parker he can put on the Jets for some while. Larry Sanders is a fast center. Brandon Knight, he can get up and down the court. Kendall Marshall, he can't do anything but pass, but you'll want him up and down the court. Mm-hmm. And the thing with Jason Kidd is I think he's going to want an up-tempo team.
Well, the interesting thing with Kidd is that he only coached there for 1 year, and we really didn't know what kind of style he wanted because he was still learning on the job. So it's going to be
thing with Kidd was, remember, he started out terrible. And it was only when the injury started happening, he sort of lucked into his rotation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a lot of question marks with him, but I see this team as a fast, up-tempo team.
Well, I read your note, and I thought about it for a second, and I'm going to throw you a wild card here, and I don't even know if Jason Kidd's going to do this, but everybody likes to mix up the small ball. What I think they should do is that they should try to play fast with tall forwards and see how it works.
Like, and they could do that. How many teams could say they could do that?
Not a lot. So that's the one advantage
they have. And
this team
has nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. You have Larry Sanders. Hopefully he'll be like, I need to prove myself.
Hey now.
Brandon Knight wants a paycheck. He's up for an extension. Jabari Parker wants to be the face of this team, so he's going to be pushing it hard.
John Henson is long in the arms.
John Henson has the most boring name in the league. It's just most forgettable. He's like Chris Johnson for the Titans.
He might be related to Jim Henson because he looks like a Muppet.
This team, I see potential, and they've just gone from the bottom of the basement, and they sort of have hope now, and I think they'll be happy with 25 wins.
And now that's 10 wins above the 15. You think that they're going to get the 25 wins, though? Because that's a marked improvement. That's the kind of improvement like the Raptors had when they went from really terrible to, hey, that wasn't so bad, to, okay, now you're pretty good. Do you think they're going to make that kind of leap, or do you think it's going to be a really forgettable season again?
I don't think it's that out of question of a leap. I don't think it's – we're not asking them for 30 wins. 25 to 30 is a big jump.
I'll give Milwaukee fans a little bit of hope. I think Steve Willey's one of them, my buddy out there on Place to Be Nation's main event. Listen to us every 2 weeks. I don't think you will be the worst team in the NBA. You might be one of them, but you're not going to be the worst.
No, they're going to be the bottom five, bottom seven. But
hey, that's another high draft pick in 2015.
Those are around 24, 25 win teams around – the 6-7 pick. So I think they can improve a few spots.
Do you think they need to bring back the retro female buck spinning the ball on the fingers again?
That arena is just depressing.
Bradley Center.
So, yeah,
that's where Marquette plays too.
That is just
it's a dump. I'm sorry, it's a dump.
Yeah, and anything they could do to provide hope for that team.
Okay, so we kind of had an interesting one here because we kind of like flew high with the top two teams, and then we went down to the abyss. So we had that kind of like this like downward trend. Hopefully the people listening here didn't think that the quality of the podcast went the same way, because I thought we were kind of finishing strong there, even though the teams didn't. So let's just go ahead and close this one out. This is Andrew Reich. We're going to be doing all these divisional previews, so please listen to us some more. Adam, you got any party shots?
Nope. Thanks for having me, and check out the other episodes where we could both provide wrong commentary again.
Yes. So, Milwaukee, there is hope. Goodbye.